This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any.
A gentle breeze, and have you ever stood somewhere that another person called holy and wondered why? Perhaps it was a mountain or a river or an ancient grove of trees. To you it was peaceful, beautiful, even unforgettable. But to someone else, it was never simply a beautiful place. It was sacred. I'm Frank Carter, and today our song of protest is not angry or demanding. It is gentle. A request to please take a short time to share my history, my heritage, my culture. It is a long track, so we will look at it verse by verse through the next 25 minutes. The song is Warriors Rising by Juane Rios. And in today's program, we ask two simple questions. What makes a place just scenic, and what lifts it to sacred? And what difference does it make to those who live there and those of us who fleetingly visit?
Carrying my mountain in my soul, guardian spirits on patrol, and I am a warrior rising, spreading my message to every nation, igniting the fire in this generation, and I am a warrior rising.
The song was written by Juane's mother, Juan Kese, in 2015 on the front line of the Mauna Kea's Protectors Stand. It was inspired as a tribute to her daughters, who were among the young warriors defending the sacred mountain, and it became an anthem for the movement to protect Mauna Kea from the 30-meter telescope. Carry my mountain in my soul, guardian spirits on patrol. I'm a warrior. Warrior rising, spreading my message to every nation, igniting the fire in this generation. And I'm a warrior, warrior rising, spinning, evolving, taking me to a place where I am sacred spirit soaring. And I know that the world is changing far too fast for me. But for now, I'm chanting down Babylon. And who do you stand for? And who do you stand for? Lift my voice up to the sky, hear my spirit cry, E'ilah. The opening images in that song, they invite us to think of a mountain not as something standing in front of us, but as something carried within us. It's a remarkable idea. Most travel brochures invite us to admire the mountain scenery. This song invites us to meet those who belong to it, who consider themselves part of it, and in being part of it, know intuitively that it is sacred. So what makes a simply treasured scenery, building, object, what makes something that's simply treasured and lifts it to sacred? We often assume that sacred places are easy to recognize. Churches, mosques, synagogues, temples, great cathedrals whose towers rise above the surrounding city. We think of Canterbury Cathedral, Salisbury Cathedral, Westminster Abbey, Canterbury Cathedral, the Christchurch Cathedral before the earthquake. They are magnificent buildings. Their architecture inspires awe. Their music has echoed through the centuries. Millions visit them every year. They are treasured because they represent some of humanity's greatest achievements. They are treasured because they preserve history. They are treasured because they speak of beauty. Yet for millions of Christians and other faiths, they are something more. They remain living places of prayer, places where people are baptized, married, farewelled, places where candles are lit in hope and tears are shed in grief. They are both treasured and sacred. Now imagine somewhere very different. No stained glass, no carved stone, no magnificent organ, no roof at all. Only a mountain or a quiet spring or a circle of weathered stones or a grove of ancient trees. To many people, to the vast majority of us, there would appear to be nothing remarkable. Yet to those who belong there, it may be among the holiest places on earth. Perhaps the difference is this, the difference between treasured and sacred. We treasure something because of what it is physically, what we read about it, what it feels like to touch, or because of what we paid for it, what it looks like. We hold something sacred because of what it means, which cannot be bought or sold. A treasure speaks to our admiration. The sacred speaks to our identity. A treasure tells us where we have been. The sacred tells us who we are. Across every culture, we find the same understanding. Māori speak of Wahitapu. Aboriginal Australians speak of country and Tsukurapa. Native Hawaiians honour Mauna Kea. Pilgrims journey to Jerusalem, Makkah, Varanasi and Santiago de Compostela. We don't have to share another person's beliefs to understand why these places deserve our respect. Another verse from Warriors Rising. Hear my spirit cry. And we will leave Hawaii for the moment and we travel to the heart of Australia, to a place that millions once came to climb, yet whose traditional owners asked the world with extraordinary grace not to. Hear my spirit cry was the voice, was the silent cry from Uluru and from the centre of Australia for so many years. Rising from the red heart of Australia, Uluru was one of those places. It has become one of the world's most recognisable landscapes. Visitors travel thousands of kilometres simply to see it emerge from the desert, to watch the colours change with the passing light, and to experience the vastness and stillness of the Australian interior. For many years, however, there was another reason people came. They came to climb it. Looking back now, it's easy to understand, easy to recognise, but also easy to assume that this story was a disagreement about access, but it wasn't. It was about understanding. The Anangu people, the traditional owners of Uluru, never asked the world to stay away. They welcomed visitors. They wanted people to experience their country, to learn, to listen, to discover something of the stories that had shaped this landscape for countless generations. Their request was remarkably simple. Please come and admire the landscape. Come and meet with us. But please don't climb. Uluru is not simply a rock. It is a living cultural landscape. Every ridge, every cave, every waterhole, every curve in its ancient sandstone carries meaning. Together they form part of Tsukurapa, the Anangu understanding of creation, law, morality, and responsibility. Tjukurpa is more than a collection of stories. It is a way of understanding the relationship between the people, the land, one another, and the creator. The stories are not separate from the landscape. They live with it. To climb Uluru, therefore, is not simply to walk on stone. It is to walk across a place held sacred by those whose lives are woven into it. And for those that who may have been there 30 or 40 years ago, you may remember the chain that was embedded in the rock that helped people to climb the first stage. I do remember visiting Uluru myself a long time ago with a group of about 50 other students when we were at university. And we had travelled around Australia for about five weeks, and we spent 3 days at Uluru. And we had the great privilege of also being accompanied by a very large gathering of local people. And we had spent 3 days, of course, looking, admiring, discussing, talking to people, visiting the tourist shops, gathering it, and of course, wondering what the rock was all about and listening to the tourism stories. And of course, we saw the indentation on the rock that looked like a brain. And so that was the brain of the rock. But that was as far as we went. We were there for 3 days. And on the last night, there was a bit of a sing-song, of course, for the people that had gathered to be with us and our group around a campfire. Last songs, 10 o'clock at night, and that was it. Following morning we were away, and we were all dispersing, of course, back to our tents. There was a tap on the shoulder. Would you like to come and meet Granddad? Oh, 10 o'clock at night in the middle of the desert. Yes, of course. So we went along and I met Granddad. And for the next 3 hours, I sat around a campfire with Granddad. An unremarkable looking person. He and I were just cross-legged around a campfire, the smoky campfire in the middle of quite a cold desert night. Most of the time was spent in silence. I used to smoke then. I used to roll my own. So every now and again, I'd roll my own and flick one over to this gentleman who was Uluru. He, I understand, was the leader of the people that had come to greet us, to be with us. And yet you wouldn't know. He is the kind of person that was there in a crowd. For 3 hours, I sat there around the campfire, I said, mostly in silence. During that time, of course, he had spoken a lot about the changing generations, about his sadness, about the younger generation, the alcohol, the drugs, moving away to the city, losing their culture, losing their traditions. And after quite some time, I gathered the courage, or the cheekiness, if you like, to say, ask what Uluru meant to him, and silence. And then, of course, he said, it's my brain. And inside, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, okay, that's just exactly what I deserved, because it was a cheeky question. We know that there's this indentation on the brain. That's my went going through my thoughts, my mind. So we're sitting at the campfire, flicking off the ash from the cigarettes. And after a few moments, it's my heart. I'm thinking, uh-oh, here we go. Here is something special. And then his hand moved across his chest, and he said, it's the blood that runs through my body. And that was it. That's all. But I remember that so crystal clear, and it was so meaningful. And it is something, the kind of thing that you carry with you. Before we go on, I do need to say that we had, of course, all been invited to climb. Well, no, not we had not been invited. It was the normal thing that everybody did in those days. Climb the mountain. Climb the rock. There's a chain and the stakes embedded in the rock, so as you helped. And of course, we heard that there was a post office box at the top of the mountain. I didn't get very far, a little bit up the chain, and I thought, this is enough for me. Perhaps a way of understanding what we were doing is to think about hospitality. Someone invites you into their home, as we indeed were welcomed. They welcome you warmly. They offer you food. They show you kindness. Then they gently ask one thing, please don't go into that room. And there were signs, which none of us seem to see, which says, you know, please don't go up the mountain. There were also plaques around, you know, two or three plaques, which showed where people had fallen off and killed themselves. Please don't go into that room. Most of us would honour that request without hesitation. The Angango people made a similar request. They did not demand. They did not threaten. They simply invited visitors to honour what was sacred to them. Gradually, of course, over time, more and more people visited and listened to the stories of Angango. Fewer chose to climb. Not because they were compelled, but because understanding changed their hearts. In October 2019, the climb was permanently closed. Around the world, there were many headlines. Some spoke of controversy, others of disappointment. But for many Angano people, the moment was quieter than that. It represented not a victory over tourists, but a growing self-confidence and self-respect. Looking back now, I realise that the greatest gift Uluru offered me was not a view from the summit, not even the landscape or the sunset. It was a different view of seeing. Now, across the Pacific, we go back to Mauna Kea. Another mountain, Mauna Kea, has become the focus of a similar conversation. Not about tourism this time, but about the relationship between science, culture, and the sacred. The mountain is called Mauna Kea. To astronomers, Mauna Kea is one of the finest places on Earth from which to study the heavens. But of course, the astronomers don't live there. They haven't grown up there. They're not related there. The air is clear. The summit rises above much of the atmosphere. The night skies are among the darkest in the world. From there, humanity has looked deeper into the universe than almost anywhere else. Every time a new telescope is built, our understanding of the cosmos grows. We learn more about distant galaxies, the birth of stars, and perhaps even something about our own beginnings. The search for knowledge is one of humanity's great adventures, but there is another story. For native Hawaiians, Mauna Kea is not simply a mountain. It is Mauna Awakea. The mountain of Wakea, the Sky Father, it is a place of profound spiritual significance. It is woven into genealogy, ceremony, prayer, and identity. It is a place where the relationship between people, the land and the heavens is remembered and renewed. In Hawaiian thought, the mountain is not simply part of the landscape, it is part of the family. Once again, we meet the distinction between the treasured and the sacred. When plans were announced to build the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea, two deeply held values met on the same mountain. Scientists spoke of discovery. They spoke of expanding humanity's understanding of the universe. Their work has enriched us all. But to be absolutely honest, I have to question what we do gain from understanding and recognizing that there might be a planet 43 light years away that may be able to support human life. Oh, come on. Seriously. Scientists speak and the astronomers speak of understanding humanity's, the understanding of the universe. Perhaps the universe is encapsulated in that mountain, but it certainly is for the people who are from there. Native Hawaiian protectors spoke of reverence. The song, Warriors Rising, speaks with both strength and hope. It is not simply a protest. It is an affirmation that identity grows from relationship with family, with ancestors, with community, and with the land itself. Whether we stand on Uluru or Mauna Kea, we begin to hear the same quiet invitation. And that invitation is, please understand what this place means to us. Here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we are learning that same lesson. Māori speak of wahi tapu, places made sacred through ancestry, burial, history, covenant, and spiritual significance. Some are marked, others are known only to the communities who care for them. Their importance is not measured by the number of visitors they attract. It is measured by the depth of meaning they carry. Many New Zealanders have had the privilege of visiting a marae. We remove our shoes where appropriate. We visit, wait to be welcomed. We listen before speaking. We accept the guidance of our hosts. None of these customs diminish our freedom. In fact, quite the opposite. They allow us to enter another community with dignity. respect does not close the door, respect opens it. The same principle can be found throughout the world. In a mosque, shoes are removed. In many Buddhist temples, voices become quieter. In churches, men remove their hats. And in some indigenous communities, certain ceremonies are not photographed. These customs are not obstacles, they are invitations. What if the greatest souvenir we ever bring home is not a photograph, but a deeper understanding of another people, and perhaps of ourselves? During the past 25 minutes, we have travelled a long way together, from the red heart of Australia to the volcanic peaks of Hawaii, and home again to Aotearoa, New Zealand. We have stood before mountains, listened to ancient voices, and discovered that places which appear ordinary to one person may be among the holiest places on earth to another. We also, along the way, we have discovered something else, the difference between something that is treasured, something that is sacred. We treasure a place because of its beauty or its history or the remarkable things that happened there. We hold a place sacred because it has become part of who we are. Sacred places are not simply admired. They are remembered, they are protected, they are loved. I suspect that almost every one of us carries with us a place that we instinctively treat with reverence. Perhaps it's a family cemetery, a memorial where names are carved into stone, a quiet beach where you scattered ashes of someone you loved, a favourite tree that stood through every season of your life, the church where you were married, the marae where your family gathered, or perhaps simply a place where, for one brief moment, life made sense. We may not all use the word sacred, but most of us know the feeling. We began today's programme with a song that spoke of carrying a mountain within the soul. At first, those words seemed poetic. Now, perhaps, they carry a different meaning. A mountain does not shape us because of its height, nor because of its beauty. It shapes us because of what it teaches us. Sacred places matter because people matter. Their stories matter. Their memories matter.
And we have a footnote for this episode. Was the 30-metre telescope planned for Mauna Kea built?
Carrying my mountain in my soul. To every nation, igniting the fire in this generation, and I am a warrior, warrior rising, spinning, evolving.
In April 2024, the project manager apologised for the contribution to division in the community and stated that the approach to construction in Hawaii is very different now from 2019. An alternative site for the 30-metre telescope has been proposed for La Palma in the Canary Islands in Spain. It's considered less scientifically favourable by astronomers, but, you know, there's a bit of a compromise going on there. And even further, we're not entirely confident that the funding is still available. So there you go. The universe on top of Mount Kea remains unaltered. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Frank Carter. And next week, our song is Everyone Should Have a Home by Martin Leahy. We look at why housing has become so expensive. We look at government policy. We look at central bank policy. And we look at commercial bank policy. We look at the drivers for the massive increase in housing over the last three generations. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Frank Carter. This has been Echoes of Dissent, Sacred or Scenic. You can catch this podcast on your go-to social media platform or freefm.org.nz and accessmedia.nz. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.